years ago, Michael got himself, dragged that piano up on this platform, and he sang that song to all of us. In fact, I think he dedicated it to me, if I'm not mistaken. That's so cool. Thank you for learning that. Could you tell we love that song? Yeah, I mean, what's not to love? That's a beautiful song. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm so happy that you're all here today because I got something really to say today, and I have a big announcement that I'm going to make at the end of my message this morning, and so you don't want to miss that. And you can start spreading the news as soon as I... What? I would not be smiling. I loved it when I was younger. Would not want to be pregnant now. Actually, I'm not sure I would hate that part. It's the next 18 or 20 years. That's something nice being on the other side of that. Amen. Yes, absolutely. Title of my message this morning is Every Living Soul. Every Living Soul. And I took the title from a passage in the book Creative Mind that Ernest Holmes, the founder of this philosophy, 100 years ago, when the book was first published, these are his words. And this is what he said. Every living soul is a law unto himself, but of this great truth, few people are conscious. There is a power that makes things directly out of itself. There is a principle that is scientifically correct, and it will never fail us. And every living soul has that. None of us are shorted. It's not blocked off from us. And it seems as though the longer I teach this stuff, it's sort of just the natural evolution of life that we just keep waking up and we keep figuring out, oh yeah, there's more, that we never want to stop growing. We never want to stop learning. We never want to stop exploring and having these beautiful adventures in life. And so we accept the whole package. You know, sad yesterday saying, well, not saying goodbye, but honoring our beautiful Judy Thompson. We will have a memorial service for her in the fall, as her family requested. But there was also something else that happened on Friday night that Cheryl mentioned. And between those two events, something's lingering in this building. You can just feel the goodness of all of that. And I sense it like a vibrational experience. And what happened on Friday night was that we had our graduation for our two practitioners. Now, they are not through. They have not qualified completely yet. They just worked themselves to the point of graduation. But before they can be licensed practitioners, the next step, now that we've done the exams and the graduation ceremony, the next step will happen in July. I believe it's around the 14th, where they will come for an oral panel experience, which is quite quite interesting. It's not, I didn't find it fun. Where you get to speak to ministers and practitioners who will decide that day whether or not you are able to exhibit the consciousness of a practitioner. Now, not only that, but they're not done yet. You know, I always think that the beauty of flourishing in that role as a practitioner happens after, in that next year. I call that the third year sometimes. And that's when we really become, because they've been too busy doing all the work to have that. But nonetheless, the graduation was spectacular. Let me see a show of hands who was here for that event. Wonderful. Then about half of you will understand some of the message, and the other half are going to be going, wow, why didn't I come? Buy the CD. Yes, that's right. We did record it, didn't we? It was such a great event. And I think one of the really exciting things that happens at a graduation is that we call together other ministers and other practitioners, and we create a ceremonial event where they get to participate. So the beauty of it is you're hearing lots of different voices all night long. And for me, and if you'll notice, if you were here where all the ministers and the practitioners were sitting, we get really revved up up at those events because we love it. You know, we love it. For us, it takes us back to our own commitment and why we're working on this path and why we're excited about it. But what I think is so beautiful about any kind of ceremony like that, an Insta minister's installation or ordination, any of those formal ceremonies, bring us together to hear a variety of perspectives on the science of mind. Now, we know there's only one principle. We know there's only one mind. There's only one God. And what we know also is that we are all individualized expressions of that one. And so what that means is we all interpret it in a very personalized way. And I simply love it when my community has an opportunity to hear it in this way and that way, and prayers that are different than the way we hear them here. And we get to flavor some of that beautiful way that others express their understanding of this philosophy. And so the other thing that happens often at graduations is that one or two people in the crowd always, you don't have to tell me who you are yet, it'll happen, but a couple people usually get walloped and they get the call, you know, it's like it lands upon them. And many of us ministers have those experiences. Not everybody's blessed with a walloping, but many of us have had that, and I think that's part of why we get reinvigorated when we come together to celebrate others in their own growth. And so what I can tell you is that I received a distinct call to ministry. I never grew up wanting to be a minister. I didn't think I was going to be. I was at a friend's graduation. It was a dear girlfriend that I studied practitioner studies with. We were licensed. She went immediately into ministry school, and 3 years later, I was at her graduation, and it was there sitting in that room. It was at Seaside Center for Spiritual Living in Encinitas. And what I can tell you is it's a big event when you go to one of those mega churches because they have a choir, and I'm telling you, it is like the angels were singing just to me. You know, it was like the sky opened up, and I promise you, I heard my name spoken out loud over a microphone, and it was my very distinct call to ministry. And I didn't expect it. I didn't see it coming. I just was in that environment where everything was right. Maybe I was ripe enough to actually hear it. Now, here's the part I want you to understand, and this is the key of the message today. That at that time, I didn't know how the heck I was going to pay for it, because it was pricey. I did not know how I, as a working mother and a busy household, my kids were older, but as a busy woman, I didn't know where the time would come from to make the commitment to those studies. But what I knew when I left that graduation ceremony and I got in my car and I got on the freeway to travel north back to Covina, California, I knew I was going to be a minister. And there was no doubt, and I no longer cared. I had no concerns about where the money would come from, where the time would come from. I just knew that I knew that I knew that I was going to be a minister. And at that time, I began to feel, with that confidence, I began to feel as though there was a cord coming from my solar plexus, and that spirit itself was on the other side, holding that cord taut and pulling me. It was as though I could feel this gentle, comfortable pulling. It's okay. I gotcha. We're going to do this. And that was my experience of recognizing the call and following through with all the requirements and working my way to where I could be standing this day, celebrating my third class of graduates for practitioner studies. And there were more before you. I taught in Covina as well. I taught prac studies. But this is what I'm proud of. This is what I'm proud of, because almost everybody that graduates here is someone who has studied with me since they started on the path. That's a beautiful thing. And then to watch you grow and shift and change. So it's a wonderful thing. Every living soul is called to something. So I think if I wanted to say it in the way I see it, which I'm going to say it, but what I see is that our entire life and the process of our lives is a series of calls and responses. That we are called again and again and again, that every encounter is a holy encounter, that every situation or condition we move through is the presence of God pulling us tautly forward so that we can respond, so that we can put one foot in front of the other and walk towards whatever that is that desires to emerge and express through our living. I love that. And so the thing that happens is we are called because there is something in us. It's not just about rising and learning and becoming a leader. We are called usually because there's something in us that needs to be healed. You wouldn't make a good minister if you hadn't been through some stuff. And you didn't have a chance to prove that this stuff works. Am I right? Amen. And so we're called to heal. We're called to, it's healing and wholing. We're returning to our wholeness, to an awareness of the truth of our being, that there is this pattern of perfection that desires to express. We are called so that we can grow, so that we can expand our consciousness, so that we might fall in alignment with the advancement of our soul. Because that's what the soul longs for. Every living soul is called. There's a beautiful passage in the Course of Miracles that says, your scriptures tell you, many are called, but few are chosen. And it should be written, all are called, but few choose to listen. The chosen ones are merely those who choose right sooner. Isn't that great? All are called. In fact, there's a place in the front of the book that says, the front of the Course in Miracles, it's a required course. The only thing you get to choose is when you take it. So as I begin to see that all of life is a call, I'm going to choose now, you know? I want to live my life with more sanity and with more peace and with a greater sense of freedom, so I'm going to choose. And that seems to be, if I look back on my own life, that seems to be the pattern. So I'm here to urge you to choose and to choose sooner. Don't wait. Now, I'm not saying it's a religious call. Not saying that we're all going to be called to be some kind of spiritual leader or healer. You already are that. But I'm saying that we open ourselves to be called forward so that we can express that in a way that is going to be superior in the package we are as a unique gift of we're a God package. You know, nobody's like us. And I was reading, incidentally, this week, and I found this, I had heard this before, but I had forgotten about it, that the root of the word religion is religare, and it means to reconnect. It means to remember what has been dismembered. You know, the way we separate ourselves from truth, we forget, we go to sleep, we think that the balance in our checkbook predicts our future or that what's going on in the world controls our life. But when we remember, when we reconnect to that greater truth, then what we see is that there's a hidden impulse within us. Within every living soul, in fact. William James, the great psychologist, the American psychologist who brought, sometimes he's actually referred to as the father of American psychology. William James said, religion is an attempt to be in harmony with the unseen order of things. So it's like remembering things that we've already known, but we haven't necessarily known that we've known. It's what I like so much about stepping into a new spiritual environment. I remember when I walked into my first Science of Mind center, we still called them churches quite comfortably back then, but I walked into this church, and the message that I heard was not about me trying to become a better person. There was no guilt, there was no shame. It was a beautiful message that sparked within me something that said, oh my gosh, these people believe just like I do. And so there's a sense of coming home when you find that fit, when you can sit and you can hear things that resonate for you rather than when you're looking how to defend yourself because you don't quite agree with whatever's being spoken. And so I think that's what this is like. It's remembering something you sort of already know or waking up to this great and glorious truth. Now, ministers, I mean, I'll tell you, I just caught the Holy Spirit. There's some fiery Holy Spirit in this sanctuary last Friday night. And I think that based upon how all the ministers were responding, I forgot how much I love that part that the ministers go a little crazy and have a really good time. And we don't care what anybody thinks. We're just here to have a good time, you know. But I can feel that movement of the Spirit because each of us has a different voice and we don't get to hear each other very much. So it's a beautiful experience. But what I noticed is that there's some passion. It's as if we come expecting an ecstatic moment, expecting a holy encounter with the divine while we're sitting in this room and all the pomp and circumstances going on. And it always makes me think of that gorgeous quote, you've heard me say it before, except for that man back there, that Emma Curtis Hopkins so beautifully said, rise up, my soul. Rise up, my soul. Quicken me with heavenly fervor. Show me the words that make the world sane and glad. Oh, what could be better? So every living soul, every agnostic, every atheist, the pagans, the Christians, 12-steppers, surfers and bikers, and soldiers and priests and monks and nuns, every, who? And drag racers, oh my, I'm sorry, Gary, I apologize. And every drag racer, every living soul, and everybody that I didn't mention, you're included in that. But think about it, because what I want you to realize is that as we look at that, every living soul, from the atheist to the pagan to the drag racer and the holiest of the holy, everyone somehow relates to that idea that there is an intelligence in this universe, that there is a presence, there is a power for good in this universe, And that we can use it. Every one of us, every living soul knows that there's in some way either a pattern of perfection that they recognize, a harmony or an order. We call it the soul. We call it the force. We call it life's longing for itself. Oh, that one's yummy. I like that. So it doesn't matter what you call it or how you view it or if you deny it, it doesn't matter any of it because every living soul is having an experience of it. And each of us defines it in the way that best fits our current understanding, right? So you know what that means? Whatever you are walking through on your own path, you are in the perfect place right now, and God is right there. Yeah. Nothing holds back that intelligence, that goodness, that peace, that love, that beauty. Nothing can stop that, and our job is to practice faith in those things that we can't see. So the God of your understanding will be the exact divine guidance that you most need right now, and it should always be growing. It should always be expanding and enlarging. Nobody has a God that's better than anybody else's God. Nobody's God is stronger or smarter or more better looking or more generous. You know, nobody's got the market on the single God. All of us have that within us that knows there is something greater than we are. And as we figure out how to live our lives, we find a way to reconnect to that greater divine truth. Yeah. Now, where it's tricky is that each of us is making up our own idea of what God is. And so you don't really want to take somebody's God away from them, you know? I liked how Timber Hawkeye was here, he said a beautiful thing. He said, when people recommend, they want me to go to church with them or recommend some kind of religious idea that I don't agree with, he said, instead of getting offended, I just think of how much they're enjoying it, and it's just like somebody telling you about a new restaurant. You know what? You need to try that new restaurant, Reverend Karen. They got this, they got that, and so we're excited about life. So we don't have to have such protection against each other, but we can find a way, and I hope that we do that every Sunday here, to honor the path of the other while we align ourselves to a greater and greater truth of what God is for us. So we each make up our own idea, and the only thing that really matters, in my opinion, is that we stay open to all of that, that we just keep growing. There's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot going on in the world. And I love that people take classes here for that opportunity to expand what's possible in their own lives, because that's how we'll heal the world. Becoming a practitioner is not about winning a prize. It is not even about accomplishing all that you've accomplished, though I'm sure there are practitioners here that would argue that point. But what I want to say is that I believe becoming a practitioner is a public declaration of a chosen path. So you put on that stole or whatever, but you don't have to have a stole or a license to be a practitioner. Anyone who practices any philosophy is a practitioner of that philosophy. And Ernest Holmes used that term long before we started licensing practitioners to do the work of practitionering. So we like ceremony like that because it's got something in it that we can feel, and that feeling is kind of contagious, and I love my job. After all these years, I still am amazed when I pull up and there's a parking space waiting for me. It's so cool. And then I get to walk in the door. I get to bless the building again, and I get to walk in the door and feel the love and the beautiful energy. I get to pray with people every day. I pray with people. What could be better? This is a perfect life. And you know, if you're here on a weekday, we stop whatever we're doing at 11 a.m. and Cheryl leads us in a 15-minute meditation. We sit in silence for 15 minutes together in this sanctuary. I love being in this building. My commitment as a minister is that I know that I desire to bring hope to people in these times that we're living in, that I desire for people to find meaning in their living and to know that your life matters. You know, that each and every one of us, our life matters and we make a difference. And so for me, that's a big part of my message, and you know that. But I read this week that the Dalai Lama said this. He said, if I teach you about reincarnation, if I teach you the precepts of Buddhism, that is religion. I am teaching religion. If, however, I teach you to be happy and I teach you about compassion, now we are talking about secular ethics. And that's what I believe we do here every Sunday, as we bring this, I hate to call it common sense, but for goodness sake, it makes so much sense that we come together and we just look at what it is that, how can we make our hearts more developed and blessed? So I, for me, bringing hope to and inspiration to people's lives is a part of my call. But Václav Havel, the Czechoslovakian president and later the Czech Republic leader and a playwright, said that he said these gorgeous words. I haven't read these in a while. Hope is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something makes sense regardless of how it turns out. Why, I have to align my life to that truth because that's what we teach here. Doesn't matter what's going on. You get to make a new choice. You get to point your life in a new direction at any given time. You just have to apply principle. So I like aligning myself to this truth because, and I can tell you, because I know sometimes it's confusing to people. People will say to me, but Reverend Karen, how can you be so optimistic with so much crap going on in the world? Or people will say to me, oh, it's just because you don't read the paper. You read the paper, you don't know what's going on in the world. I know what's going on in the world. You don't have to read the paper or watch the news to know. Because every time you get on the internet or look at Facebook, everybody's arguing about it or pointing it out again. But what I know is that this is probably my greatest gift, is that I have always been optimistic about the future of the world. That I have great hope and expectation about the planet and about humanity. And that might be where I'm a little different than most people. I just have always had this great faith in humanity. And one time, a while back, I had to pull these notes out, but I knew right where to look for them. Oprah was interviewing Jack Kornfield. You know, I was thinking Jack Kornfield reminds me a lot of Timber Hawkeye. He's a Buddhist, but he's just into living well and calm and gentle and something beautiful about them. And Oprah asked Jack Kornfield, do you have hope for humankind? Are you an optimist? And he responded really quickly. He said, completely, yes, I have hope. Life is too wildly mysterious to not have hope. Yes, he said, things can get bad, but we're growing and we're developing and we're learning. And now, this time we're living in now, is a time for the development of the heart. Yes, I have tremendous respect for what's possible. That last line just moves through me. I can just feel it. Yes, I have tremendous respect for what's possible. Can you stand in that place and have that with me? You know, I mean, it's something to think about. It's like, what do I believe? And what do I believe most of the time? And how do I live my life? And how do I make my choices? So, my announcement that I'm so excited to tell you about is that the Board of Trustees, I am a member of that board, we had a special meeting this week. On Tuesday, we met in the daytime, and we have come together. It feels very cohesive, and we want to be good stewards not only of the planet, but of our center, and somehow we are knowing that this is the time to launch a campaign, a building campaign, to begin with the exterior painting of this building. Now, here's what I want to tell you. It is the desire of this board, more than any board I've sat with, they've all wanted the same thing, but this board really is able to articulate the desire they have to make the outside of the building as attractive as the message that is inside. And so we want this, we desire this, and we can have this. And I don't know where the money's going to come from. I don't know who the contractor's going to be. I don't know how we're going to manage any of the details, because we certainly have been talking about it for, well, not as long as I've been here, but in the last few years anyhow. And I realized on Friday night, if Reverend Cheryl can put her demand on the law for proper undergarments that we could put the demand on the law for our building to look gorgeous and attractive so that more people will be drawn here. Am I right? You really missed something on Friday night. So here's what we're going to do. When I was a practitioner back in Covina, and about 15 years I stayed, I was at one church before I came here. And so I always say I grew up there. It's where I studied prac. It's where I did my ministry. I lived there when I was going through ministry school. And there's a story about that church in Covina. It sits on Citrus Avenue in Covina. Actually, it looks kind of like Azusa. And one of the founding members who's still living, he was quite advanced in years when I was there. He knew Ernest Holmes well. In fact, he lived with Ernest Holmes for a little while when he was a teenager. And his name is Carl Bennett. And Carl Bennett told this gorgeous story about how they were meeting as a study group in somebody's living room. And then they grew so big that they bought a house. There was a small group of people, but they purchased a house, and then they used that. And then they had they used the back rooms for the children's Sunday school stuff. And then eventually they outgrew that house, and they knew it was time to build a church. And so they started praying about it, and somebody donated the land. A big, beautiful piece of land in a really cherry place. So they started a campaign, and they gathered money, and they got very excited about it. And finally, they had enough money to lay the foundation, to put that cement foundation out there in the lot. But then they ran out of money. They didn't have any more money, and then it seemed like it stalled. And I would say it's felt like that sometimes for me, that we stall. We get so close to kicking off a campaign, and then we stall somehow. And I would say maybe we weren't ready in consciousness. We had to hear Reverend Cheryl. Oh, wait, that happened before Reverend Cheryl's talk. But anyhow, something had to happen where we had to start getting together and going, wait a minute, what do we believe? Can we stand on principle and know that there's nothing we can't have? So this group of people called a prayer meeting. And they called a prayer meeting in 1955, and there was this dirt lot with nothing but a slab of cement there. They had a great vision of what they wanted the church to look like, but there was nothing there. So they called a prayer meeting, and everybody came in their cars after dark, and they surrounded that big old slab right where the church sits now. And they turned on their headlights, and I imagine that, I get this vision of these 1950 Chryslers and Buicks and Caddies, you know, and they surrounded that slab, and they turned their lights on, and they prayed. They got out of their cars, and they prayed, and then things started moving again, and eventually they built the church. So we are going to have our own opportunity to surround this building and pray. I want you to mark Wednesday, June the 27th on your Save the Date calendar. Wednesday, June the 27th, we will have our Wednesday evening service right inside here. Reverend Clyde will be back from his vacation by then, and he will be leading that meeting. I expect we'll have more people here. And when that service is complete, we are going to meet outside, and we are going to circle around this building. You can sit in your car. You can bring lawn chairs if you want, and then sit outside. It'll be a beautiful, warm evening. The moon is going to be full. It should be an extraordinary experience. I personally know that I want to walk around the building while I'm praying, because I like to move when I pray, as you know. And you can do whatever you want. We're going to pray for 1 hour. You can just sit and quietly meditate if you want. If you can't get over here because of the hour, because it'll be a little later, sit at home and dedicate some time to praying. And we're not just praying, but we are imagining, we are envisioning how beautiful this building can be. And we are going to sit together, and we are going to affirm the truth as we say those prayers. We know that the money is not an issue, that the money will come, that the resources are already here, and that we can have this, and that we can be then the finest New Thought Center in the West Valley. Are you with me? And so I want to close this morning with this wonderful quotation from Ernest Holmes. It simmers down to this. Can we, in the midst of negative conditions, accept a greater good? If we can, we shall be complying with the law of life. We shall be giving life a chance to work for us. Let's give God a chance to work for us. Let's come together and start this campaign. Your board of trustees will be ironing out some of the details, and they will make an official announcement. This is just an invitation, and I wanted you to get excited because I'm excited. And let's just do this. Take a breath. Whew. All right. And so what I want to do now is to move into that place of prayer where we will anchor this idea in truth. And so if you are a minister or a practitioner, please stand and surround this room with your consciousness, knowing that these are holy, holy words with mighty power.